You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When it comes to supporting people who are struggling with mental illness, treating them, the safety net in Michigan has a lot of holes. Parents of young people who have mental health challenges know this all too well. It can be very difficult to get an immediate appointment with a psychiatrist or a psychologist. So where do you go? What do you do for a young person who is having a mental health crisis? And this is a matter of life and death. Julie Halpert knows that all too well. Her son, Garrett, died by suicide in 2017. He was 23 years old. And she now wants to turn her family's loss into action, action to help other young adults. Julie Halpert, welcome. It's good to have you here on Stateside.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And we also want to welcome Dr. Victor Hong, Medical Director of the Psychiatric Emergency Services at the University of Michigan. Dr. Hong, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Julie, would you share some of Garrett's story for us?
Sure. Garrett was an incredible young person. He really lived his life wanting to help other people. He was kind and compassionate and authentic, but he also had many gifts. He was incredibly bright, a wonderful poet, and an amazing athlete. He holds the record at Pioneer for the most wins at number one singles in his age group, started playing number one singles as a freshman, but he was always there for others. And he struggled periodically with depression, but he lived a really full life. After he had had a difficult time transitioning to college, and then he went to a school called Denison to play tennis. He ended up leaving after his first semester. It was difficult, and he was experiencing a lot of challenges. Ended up transferring to the University of Michigan and was happy there and struggled periodically. After he graduated college, he decided to work for CityEar, which is a program that helps young people at risk. And he worked in a low-income school in Washington, D.C. So he worked there for a while. And then after that, was ironically starting to work for a foundation that works to prevent suicide among high schoolers in the Northern Virginia community. At the time, he had had a breakup of his first relationship, and he was unsure. He felt isolated in this job. He's a community person. He loves to be among people. He was kind of working on his own. Decided to come back to Ann Arbor, and then he seemed okay initially, and then really started to struggle.
So you could see that he was struggling.
We could see that he was struggling. He was withdrawing. We, of course, got him to see a therapist. We are trying to find ways to help him. We, at one point, did want to take him to the ER, but he really didn't want to go. He had been there before. He found it had not helped him. He was really looking for ways to heal that were not in a hospital setting, that were not in an institutional setting, that were not stigmatizing. And we were frantically looking for a place that could help him in that way and really could not find it. And within a very short period of time, a week to 10 days, he took his life. It was obviously nothing that we could have ever imagined that he would have done. As I said, he really lived such a full life here, and he did amazing things while he was here. But it was, of course, heart-wrenching. We felt helpless in our struggle, and we are educated. I'm a journalist, and I cover suicide and suicide prevention. The irony was not lost on us that we felt very much alone in our struggle, as did he. And we're trying to make meaning out of this.
Yes.
and find a way to honor his goodness. He was such a good soul. I can't tell you how many people come up to me and say, he changed my life. He was incredible to me. He also got along so well with people of all ages. He was a counselor briefly at the Y. Little kids loved him. He loved little kids. He could walk into a party with older adults and chat them up and immediately become, you know.
He was a very bright light.
He was a very, very bright light. It was as if he was living his most full life while he possibly could, fighting the darkness as much as he could, and in the end, the demons in his head won.
Dr. Hong, how common is Garrett's story, especially that aspect of the stigma of the hospital or that the ER did not help? What do you see?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I've heard Julie tell Garrett's story a few times, and every time it does make me stop and think and reminds me why I do my job. So I do want to thank her and her family for their inspiration. Unfortunately, their story is not unique, and there are too many survivors of suicide out there. The issue with the stigmatization of mental health is a huge one. It's still the number one reason why people do not seek treatment. Mm-hmm. However, over the decades, we've done a lot better in terms of destigmatization. So there are a lot of young people do seek care, whereas they didn't before. It's still a huge problem. And so when you have settings in which it's sort of a medical model, so you're in a hospital or not, and there's few in-between options, it can be difficult to find something that's a good fit.
What other stories come to mind that you've seen? You know, you're in an emergency setting. You're right there on the front line. So what else have you seen and stories that stick with you about the lack of services and how that impacts the patients you treat and their families?
Well, again, unfortunately, there are numerous gaps across the spectrum of care. So when you have somebody who comes in and says, listen, I wanted to get an appointment with a psychiatrist. I was told that the wait list was 3 to 6 months. I mean, that's far too long for anyone who's in crisis. When somebody is in a major crisis, they need a hospitalization or some kind of elevated level of care, and there are financial or insurance barriers. These are all things that we see time and time again. It's very frustrating for the patients, for their families, and certainly us as mental health providers.
When we talk about the, I'm going to use air quotes here, the mental health safety net, particularly when it comes to young people, what does the landscape look like across Michigan?
Sure. So, you know, there are struggles across the spectrum, as I said. There certainly are community mental health providers. These are state and county funded programs, which are generally supposed to be the safety net, especially for those who are uninsured.
I hear you say supposed to be.
There's been a lot of budget cuts that have impacted the availability of services, especially in an outpatient setting. So when you have agencies which are needing to tighten their belts, it's really tough to have an entire spectrum of services that can meet the demands and the growing demands, especially for young people.
So, Julie, as you walked this journey with Garrett as he was having his struggles, what did you encounter as far as what Dr. Hong just mentioned, that you call somebody's in crisis and, oh, my goodness, we can get you an appointment in 3 months? How did you find the access to mental health care?
Well, we, of course, were able to get him to see a therapist very quickly, but it was a once-a-week situation, and we found that when we really needed to talk to this person, we got the answering machine saying, if this is an emergency, call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room, right? And we just wanted somebody to walk us through what the options would be. This person got back with us, you know, 6-7 hours later, and of course, we were keeping our son safe in the interim, but we felt like there wasn't really this in-between, and that's what we're trying to create, a step-up between, you know, going to the emergency room. By the way, if somebody is actively suicidal, that's what they absolutely have to do, and what we're creating would not address that or take the place of that. But there are a lot of in-between, people who are really struggling severely, but that are not actively suicidal. They need to see their therapist more than once a week, but they they don't need to necessarily go to the emergency room. It is not set up to deal with all of those situations. So,
and here we turn to this nonprofit, this 501c3 nonprofit that you have set up, Garrett's Space, honoring his legacy, continuing his legacy. What is Garrett's Space?
So in the case of Garrett, you know, he lost hope that he could ever get better. And many young people feel they are alone in their struggles, that there's something wrong with them. We want to restore hope. What we decided to do is when Garrett passed away, we set up a fund at the Depression Center. We didn't know what we wanted to do with that money.
At the
University of Michigan. And we didn't know what we wanted to do with that money. We were obviously immersed in grief, but we wanted a place where people could put their money. And then ultimately, we were sitting at Garrett's graveside one day when the two of us, exactly at the same time, came up with this idea of a residential treatment center, a place where young adults could go for 2 to 3 week stays, and that where they could be taught coping strategies of coping and resilience. We live in a troubled, polarized world now, one that's very difficult for young people. We are targeting people between the ages of 18 to 28, times when they're going through major transitions, often the breakups of first relationships, which can be a trigger, and they're not either living at home or close with their parents. They're not minors, so their parents may not have access to their psychiatric and medical records. We want a place that will basically be like stigma-free rehab. When you're addicted to drugs and you hit bottom, there are lots of reasonably priced, warm, welcoming options. There are not that many options like that for mental health care.
So you and your husband, Scott, want to create this space in Washtenaw County so it would be there for these young adults.
Yes, and we envision a place that, in addition to having, of course, traditional therapy, mm-hmm. A place that's holistic in nature. We expect to locate this in that's in nature, physically in nature. Also, we'll have different holistic approaches like meditation, which is something our son practiced often, yoga, journaling, exercise, healthy cooking, music, dance. And most importantly, a key component will be peer-to-peer support. We feel that young adults can be helped by others who have struggled and come out the other side. We know that our son could have benefited from that. And if I can digress for a moment and tell you a story.
Do.
A few months ago, we got a donation from a young adult, a tennis player who was on the same competitive tennis circuit as Garrett. I don't know if he knew Garrett. We did not know him. It was for a substantial sum of money. And he was very young. Maybe I think he was 25. The next day, we found out that he took his life. So he basically donated his entire life savings to Garrett's space. Now, we do firmly believe that if Garrett and this person could have been brought together through a place like Garrett Space, they could have really helped each other and helped each other to persevere.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Dr. Hung, what would this work like when we say residential? What kind of, is this drop-in? Is this come for a set period of time? What do you think would be the most effective?
Well, I think we're, you know, still some ways away from that vision. But I think the vision of Garrett Space is that, again, like Julie is saying, that it's going to be a place where young adults can go when they're in crisis and receive a mix of evidence-based individual and group therapies, which are so important. But she's touching on a few very important things. She's talking about peer support. One thing she didn't mention but is crucially important is the inclusion of families in treatment. That's definitely not done enough. We sort of treat people once they turn 18 as they're adults and they're good to go. Well, we know that that's not true. They're in transition. These transition age youth really do benefit from the participation of their families. And then the other thing is that
because they're over 18, and Julie, you touched on this, parents are actually blocked from accessing things.
It's, many times, yes.
Yes.
And
yeah.
We definitely want to have support for families that are going through this as well.
Right. And the only other thing I was going to say was that, you know, given the relationship issues that Garrett was having before his death, and a lot of young people are having before they die by suicide, they really want to focus on that. And I think that's a very smart thing to do.
So this is one effort. It would be a space, and are you still looking for the space? Where are you in creating this?
So we are at the very initial stages. We envision this is a very ambitious project, obviously. And I should mention the Depression Center is not going to pursue this on their own. We are a partner with them. Mm-hmm. And by the way, our goal with that partnership is to research this and have it be best practices so that it can be a model, not just across the state of Michigan, but our goal is to have Garrett spaces all over the country. There is no good template for this. There are individual examples of it in different cities and states, but no model. So we are at the very beginning, and because it's going to take a while to actually build a physical space, we are rolling out interim programming. So the first thing that we did is we are distributing 25,000 door tags throughout Washtenaw County to households in Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti. We're halfway through. We've done about 15,000 so far. And they list resources where you can turn in a crisis. This seems like something that's very fundamental, but I cannot tell you how much positive feedback we've been receiving from mental health experts and even from people themselves saying, oh my gosh, I'm putting this on my refrigerator, or I had a relative or a young person, you know, mm-hmm. contemplating suicide. I'm so glad we have these resources. So these have been vetted resources. The second thing we're doing is we hope by next year, rolling out yoga and peer-to-peer support in other spaces in advance of having our own space.
So you're phasing it in as you build this. And we should note that anyone who wants to learn more about this can go to garrettsspace.org. And Garrett is spelled with two R's and two T's. So garrettsspace.org. Dr. Hong, what do we do about this shortage of mental health professionals? The reason there is a 3 to 6 month wait is there's just not enough. What should we be doing differently in our state?
You know, it's not that simple. Before I answer that question, I do want to say that despite all of this doom and gloom and barriers mm-hmm. to care, it's very important to reinforce that there is help out there. And that's one of the reasons why it's really heartening that the first project that Garrett Space took on was to distribute these hanger tags, you know, which basically lists various crisis services that are available 24/7. The information is also on the website. And really, everyone who's in a mental health crisis should know where and how to get treatment immediately. And so this is one step towards that. In terms of the lack or the shortage of psychiatric care, the reason why I say it's not that simple is if you specifically look at the types of treatments that are out there, there are treatments, however, there are psychiatrists. However, many of them do not take insurance. A lot of the costs are exorbitant. And so for a lot of individuals who may be uninsured or underinsured, the challenges are great, and you kind of have to go to these sliding scale options, which often are not available. So while we can say we can flood the market with psychiatrists, at the same time, there needs to be a little bit of a different system in terms of how to access that care.
So this is a piece. Garrett Space, as it comes together, will be a piece of this puzzle, but there's much more to be done.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that Julie had not mentioned, but I think it's important too, is that when they do roll out this interim programming, their focus is to provide that extra support for individuals who are actually being discharged from a psychiatric hospital. I think that's really important to emphasize. The reason for that is when an individual is coming out of a psychiatric hospital, they are at the highest risk in their lifetimes of suicide during that transition phase out of that supportive environment to outside in the world. And so any additional support and connection during that transition time is really crucial.
And I should mention that Victor is on our board, and we've been working very closely with him, and we have a team of incredible mental health professionals, really all-stars in every aspect, not just mental health professionals, but fundraisers. We plan to make this available to anybody, regardless of ability to pay. Obviously, I know that it's very ambitious. That is our goal, and that's something we're really going to try to do because, as Victor mentioned, there's huge cost barriers.
Well, certainly, again, the website is garrettspace.org, so you can keep checking that site to see as this gets ramped up. And Julie Halpert, founder of Garrett Space, we want to thank you for sharing your story and Garrett's story. And please keep us posted on the work you're doing putting Garrett Space together. And also Dr. Victor Hong, Medical Director of the Psychiatric Emergency Services at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
If you or someone you know may be considering suicide, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-TALK.